Hey friends, as I'm recording this, it's 2 days after the presidential election. The internet is full of opinions and advice on how to go forward, but if you can just indulge me for a quick second, I'd like to say a few things. I think we're all in shock. I know I am. I was even surprised at some of my own reactions to the results. I'll be honest with you, I felt some fear. Real fear, and I think a lot of us are. There are two competing narratives out there, and one is first that the sky is falling, the other is that we shouldn't be afraid because, guys, God's got this. You may think I'm here to affirm the latter narrative and shun the former, but not exactly. Yes, I think God is in control, but I think we've got to talk about what that means. Because after your republic fails, the economy collapses, and you have to live with the generator and grow your own food, God is, of course, still in control. He's on his throne. Jesus is still king. But life will be much harder. And no, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think we're going to need to get generators and shotguns, and I don't think the economy is going to collapse. And for that reason, I'm thankful for checks and balances in our government that limits the damage that one branch can do. But what I am saying is that too often when we say God is in control, what we're really saying is that it isn't going to affect my life that much. And for many of us, I think that's true. But for millions of others, it's just not. And if we really believe that God's in control and going to take care of us, then that means that we are, as Christians, compelled to be that presence of God in the world. During Donald Trump's campaign, many people were emboldened to be overtly and outright racist to people of color because they felt like Trump had given them license to do so. It's just 2 days after the election, and there are reports of graffiti with swastikas and messages telling people of color to go home. For many immigrants who've lived here since before they can remember, they face the prospect of deportation and being separated from their families, sometimes the only families they've ever known. So, yes, God is in control. But that means those of us with privilege have to stand in solidarity with those who have something tangible to lose now. So will you speak up and stand in the way when you hear hurtful language hurled at someone because of their ethnicity? Will you participate in nonviolent civil disobedience to protect people from immoral executive orders or new laws? That is what it means to declare that Jesus is king and God is in control. So, no, I'm not trading my 401k for bars of gold. I don't own a generator or a shotgun. We'll survive the next 4 years. Don't panic. But if you do, the door at my house is open. We'll cry together and we'll pray. Thanks for listening. Now, on to the rest of the show. You're listening to Seminary Dropout, and I'm your host, Shane Blackshear. In cooperation with MissioAlliance.org, straight from my house in Austin, Texas to yours, interviews with leading Christian authors, leaders, and thinkers, because good theology should be for everyone. This is Seminary Dropout. Let's go! Hey friends, this week's episode is a little bit different. If this is the first time that you're listening to Seminary Dropout, this is usually just a straight up one-on-one interview format show. But this one, like I said, is different. A few weeks ago, some of you probably remember me talking online about this conference called She Leads. It was put on by MissioAlliance.org. Well, the organization is just Missio Alliance, but you can go to their website at MissioAlliance.org and a few other partners. It took place in Chicago, but was simulcast to several cities all over the U.S. Here in Austin, I was a part of a group that put it on. My church, Austin Mustard Seed, helped organize that. And we had a local panel after the simulcast part, or actually in between some of those. The local panel was just so phenomenal that I wanted to share it with you. And so that's today's episode. The She Leads Conference was about men and women working together in the church. And I was just so impressed with all the panelists that I really wanted you to hear it. Like some of the live things that we've done, the audio isn't as great as it usually is because we're not in a kind of controlled environment, but it was just so good that I thought it was worth it. So please power through that. Hear these things. If you want to read more about who these panelists are, then go to the show notes for this show, and I will list it all there. Without further ado, here is the Austin, Texas panel for She Leads.
All right, ready for you to take us off.
Hey, everybody. How's everybody doing? We're running a little bit late, so that's why I'm sounding a little rushed right now. So we're going to have our local panel, and I'm just super excited, the people that we've been able to assemble for here today. I am going to just moderate. My name is Shane Blackshear. I'm a part of Austin Mustard Seed. I'm their lead team there, and I do other crazy side projects. But I think what I want to do is just start out by asking the panelists just to introduce themselves, you know, who they are and where they serve and that kind of thing. So Tish, why don't we start with you?
Hi. So my name is Tish Harrison Warren, and who I am and where I serve. Okay. So who I am. You can answer that in so many ways.
Determine.
I'm a 6 on the Enneagram. So I live in Austin. I'm from Austin. 7th generation Texan. So we've been here forever. And I am a priest in the Anglican Church of North America. I serve at Resurrection South Austin. I also work with InterVarsity Women in the Academy of Professions, which seeks to serve and empower women for whatever vocation they are called to. And I'm a writer, so I've written around, I write frequently for Well, for what was known until a month ago as Hermeneutics, which is now called Christianity Today Women or CT Women. And for Christianity Today, I write for them a lot. So, and I have a book coming out in December, my first book. It's called Liturgy of the Ordinary, and the subtitle is Sacred Practices for Everyday Life, and you can pre-order it today. I'm going to go ahead and take a pause right now and get on the phone. I grew up Baptist, so I can do an altar call for ordering my book. This is the last thing I'll say, because you don't want to introduce myself too long, but I was, it's been a journey for me with the women, with women in ministry, because I grew up in a church where women weren't ordained, but even kind of didn't serve in front or in any kind of public way, and then went to a different church where women were not ordained but had kind of more of a role. And anyway, long story short, I was not for women's ordination for the majority of my adult life. And now I'm an ordained priest in the church. So there was some things that happened in the process. And actually my husband became for women's ordination like a year before I did. And we laugh about going on a walk and me telling him, like, I'm just really worried about you theologically. So, ironically, me getting ordained was submitting to my husband.
So, with every head bowed and every eye closed, who wants to pre-order Tish's book? I see that hand.
Those are my favorite
people. Tasha. Well, I am Tasha Morrison. I'm on staff here at Gateway Church. I'm at the central location. I am also the founder of Be the Bridge, which is an organization that actually helps create conversations around racial reconciliation. So I do a lot with that. I'm also in the process of submitting a book proposal that is due this week. And so lots going on that as it relates to women in ministry. For me, I didn't grow up in the church. So a lot of this is new for me, this theological perspective and conversation. And especially me being an African-American woman. So that's a part of my identity, and I bring all of that. And so my upbringing, when I became a Christian in college, my first pastor was a female, the church that I was a part of. And I grew up, as far as my first job in ministry, I was around a lot of women who were leading within the church. So it was very foreign to me coming outside of that environment. Like, what? Did I step into the Twilight Zone or something? But yeah, so it's been a really interesting journey as far as my perspective and just the conversations and lots of opinions there. I always tell Kenny, I never lack any opinions about anything. but yeah, but that's a part of my journey too.
Yeah. I'm Keith Atkinson. I'm a pastor at Red River Church. Red River is an interesting place. It's kind of a good picture, I think, of what's going on in society. I would say our church isn't very large, but it's very diverse in age. And you see the older folks having issues and the younger folks having different issues. And part of my job is to try to bring them together. And, you know, those sort of questions. My background is Pentecostal. I was raised, my grandfather was a Pentecostal pastor, and we lived next door to the church, so we had to go. I missed Bonanza on Sunday nights because I had to go to church. Lamented that, but still somehow came to follow Jesus. But anyway, growing up, some of my heroes were female missionaries of the Assemblies of God. The Assemblies of God was a denomination that had female pastors, but typically the pastors that were female were not in the States. They were church planters in third world countries. They were amazing women. And so I grew up in an environment where, you know, the missionaries we supported would come and share about what was going on with them when they were on furlough. And I just remember these fantastic, unbelievable, courageous women who planted churches in third world countries, and they were amazing. And so I still, you know, some of the things I've dropped from my Pentecostal heritage, but that's one thing I have clung to, is that when the Holy Spirit anoints someone for ministry, there's no male or female, Jew or Gentile, bond or free, but Christ is all. And I still believe that. I'm in a church right now where, I don't know what our theological position is on that. I think it's changing probably, but that's it.
Well, I'm Kenny Green, and every time I'm in a room like this where they're serving coffee and stuff on a church campus, I always want to start by saying I'm a recovering drug addict. So it just feels a little bit like a meeting. So so my name's Kenny, and I'm a recovering addict, but I actually... I'm with Gateway as well. Tasha and I get to team together with Gateway Central. And so Gateway's been around for quite a bit, but we just started a third campus here in Austin this year. So we have this central campus, as we call it, that's been meeting downtown for the better part of about 8-9 months now. We're having a good time. And it's really cool. I think so. Aaron got in touch with me and invited me to come and be a part of this today. And I think one of the coolest things about it, every time I kind of get a whiff of something that I feel like moves what I believe to be the heart of Jesus forward in our culture, you know, to sit in that room, rather I'm in the back row or sitting up front for some reason, is always to me a privilege. And I think that's why I'm here today. I just thought it would be cool to come and be a part of the conversation for sure. I have a... kind of interesting, my ministry story really only starts about 12 years ago, and I spent the better part of my 20s very much in the world and lost in more than a few ways. And so in some ways I don't have a lot of denominational, maybe church baggage that that in some ways maybe my bad choices protected me from a little bit of that in my life, so I'm kind of grateful for that. I wasn't until I was about 34 that I realized that women don't as readily get accepted in leadership and ministry, and so this is a really compelling conversation to me because a lot of the best people that I serve with, a lot of the best ministers that I actively see in my life right now are women. One of them is sitting up here. Mm-hmm. Tasha's one of them. So this is a great, I'm just glad to be here. This is really cool, really fun.
Well, thank you all for being here. Just as you were all talking, just realizing just the diversity of background here and where you've come from and had different experiences, I think that's so valuable. So the first question, well, I guess it's the second question, just in general, discuss some of the specific obstacles women currently face in the local church that keep them from leading well or feeling free. So,
okay, we're starting with me. I have so many. It was hard for me. It's hard for me to narrow this question down because I think there's several. So in general, I'll talk about one external obstacle and one internal obstacle, I guess. But I think, so in terms of obstacles, well, I'll start with the internal. I think, and I recently wrote a piece about this that you guys can read. You can Google it. It's in hermeneutics. But so Andy Crouch has a book called Strong and Weak that's very, very good and I highly recommend. But he talks about the relationship between what he calls authority and vulnerability. And so we tend to think about strength and weakness as opposites, but the reality is he does a 2x2 graph. So you can have low authority and low vulnerability. You can have high vulnerability and low authority, and that would be like exploitation and slavery, right? You can have high authority and low vulnerability, and so that's the slaveholder, that's the exploiter. Lots of power and very little vulnerability. You can have low authority and low vulnerability, which is kind of a place of safety. The example he uses is like video games, right? Like you are not risking much. Like when you play, if you play a football, see, I don't play video games. So if the football video game, Madden, is that?
Sure.
Okay. you're not going to get injured, probably, but you're also not, like, nobody really cares if you win that. I'm sorry. Because it doesn't make a difference in the world. So there's low risk, but there's low capacity for action. So flourishing, he points to, as is high vulnerability and high authority. So where you're embracing your invulnerability and you're in a place of leadership or a place of capacity for action is the way that he describes authority. So that doesn't always look like overt leadership. I mean, I think when I think of motherhood, that's in my life, that's been a place where there's been high authority, high capacity for action, and high vulnerability. And so that is the place of flourishing. So in general, I think as a culture, men tend to be encouraged towards having high authority and low vulnerability. So we tell men, don't show your feelings, don't be weak, buck up. And so there's a diminished flourishing there. We're encouraging them towards to be people that exploit others. But I think with women, and I need to say, everything I'm saying on this panel is in very broad strokes. I know there's 1,000 exceptions. So that's just anytime we talk about it, maleness and femaleness, that's going to be the case. But in general, I think we're encouraged away from authority and toward vulnerability. So being a vulnerable, soft, kind of having need, showing your weakness as a woman is in general more, I think, embraced. Or encouraged, or seen as feminine, or seen as sexy, or whatever, and away from authority. And I mean, we even see this Hillary Clinton having to walk this weird line of showing that she's tough enough but soft enough in this weird sort of interplay. And so I think for me, what I have come to realize is that taking authority, taking places of leadership, is terrifying to me. Just terrifying in a way that it is for some other men, but I think for many, I'd say particularly white men, are kind of, that it comes of it naturally, or at least it's it honors them in a way that I think that I realized as I was stepping into places where leadership, the emotional experience of that for me was shame. Just a sense of deep exposure. And so I think there's some internal stuff that we have to work through as women to disentangle our notion of femininity from our notion of authority, or not being an authority, really, and to learn a new perspective where we can be fully, fully women and fully embrace femininity and also fully embrace authority. So I think there's some internal stuff. But I also just want to name, and this may be really obvious, that in terms of external, that the sexism is a real thing. And I think one of the things that frustrates me with the conversation about should we ordain women, should we not, is that so quickly when you bring up women in the church, it immediately goes to questions of ordination and leadership. And I want to say that's a really important question, but we need to set that aside and talk about sexism, because that's it in and of itself. That is a sin, and that is a sin found in complementarian places. And that's a sin found in egalitarian places. There's no place that that's not there. And it's a power and a principality. And so I think it's a little bit like, and it's totally different. I'm not trying to equate race and gender here, but I think if every time we talked about race in the church, we immediately went to a policy, we immediately went to like, what is your opinion on affirmative action? That's not helpful. We need to start by talking about, there is this thing called racism. It is a sin, it's an idolatry, let's talk about it. And I think in the same way, we have to talk about sexism as a church wherever you fall on the ordination question. And not recuse ourselves who are for it as being, oh, well, clearly we're not sexist because we are, you know. And at the same time, not immediately say, well, you guys can't be in this conversation until you're ready to ordain a woman. So I think that this is just a conversation we all have to have.
That's really good.
And you're
going to
have to repeat the question.
Yeah, sure. probably this time,
yeah.
To discuss specific obstacles women currently face in the local church to keep them from leading well or feeling free to do.
Yeah. Well, I think when we talk about specific obstacles, it depends on denomination. That women are in. You're seeing a lot of ministries that are forming outside of the church. So, and actually, a church that that I was in before coming to Gateway, a lot of people had ministries outside of the church. And so, what is happening? Things that God is birthing in women, they don't feel like they have a pathway or the authority, is creating these boxes and to do it within the church, so they're going outside of the church. And so I know someone that has an international prayer ministry, but none of that is happening in the local church capacity. Something's wrong with that, you know? And so I think it creates barriers for women to lead based off of our theologies. And so for me, I'm not gonna be, you know, for me, I'm not going to be boxed in, you know, as that relates. So I would probably do the same thing. If I can't do it within the church, I'm going to do it outside of the church. Mm-hmm. You know, but when you think of kingdom, it's still a part of the kingdom. But how greater the ministry could be if the church embraced it and lifted up and became a part of what people are doing within the church. So what I'm seeing is a lot of women that are actually leaving the church because of the barriers. I'm seeing a lot of women who are starting ministries outside of the church
because of this. And when you look at our population, 55% women, you think about the population of churches now, like as far as the increase in churches. So just imagine if we are only allowed to hear half that voice. Something's wrong with that, you know? And so I think it's just like, for me, it's beyond like that theological, we can get into a theological conversation about it, but to me, it's some common sense, you know? Some common sense, like that doesn't make sense, and it doesn't resonate with the Jesus that I know that I serve and love, you know? It just, to me, it doesn't make sense. And because I'm coming like Kenny, I don't come with a lot of the baggage of denominations. I don't come with that. I don't, you know, so I don't, and which I'm glad. You know, but when we look at the perspective from women that are coming in to the Christian faith from other faiths or coming from not a Western culture, so you have women who are that maybe are leaving the Muslim faith, like, you know, leaving Islam, and they're coming into Christianity, and what they see is these additional barriers for them as women. We have to look at, you know, beyond Western culture, what does that look like, you know, internationally, and what does that look like to people outside of the church as people are coming to faith in Jesus Christ. And so I think those are some of the needs that we create. So I think the church is actually not benefiting. Some of the obstacles causes the church to not benefit from the ministries and the giftings of some of the women that are serving in the church, because when they're not allowed to do or teach or pray in a church, in a mini church context. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I guess it's pretty obvious, but the culture war is going on. It's difficult, I think, at least in my church. The culture wars, somehow women in leadership gets thrown in with all the other issues. Some of which, you know, are pretty clear in Scripture, and some of which are not. But it kind of gets thrown into all of that. And some people that I see, and they think that if you go, you know, instead of acting intentionally, the church acts reactively. I don't guess that's anything new, but I see that a lot in my church with some of the older folks, I would say. The other thing I would say is just that we have a very male, testosterone-driven picture of leadership in some arenas of the church that is very antithetical to everything Jesus Christ said about leadership.
Yeah.
I faced it myself because I know I'm a big guy and I'm wearing cowboy boots, but I'm a real softy. I cry easy. I'm very empathetic. And some people don't think that's leadership material. You know, and when you see Jesus talk about leadership, he's always telling the disciples, it's not what you think. Let me bring in the children. I think today you might bring in a woman.
Yeah,
I mean, absolutely. Maybe, you know, and say, unless you become like this woman, you won't entertain. So I, at least where I am, I think the culture and an understanding about leadership that's, you know, Teddy Roosevelt, San Juan Hill sort of thing, rather than what Jesus says. And what Paul says, too. What Paul says is that leadership in the church is about investing in people so the body of Christ will be a city set on a hill and demonstrate the kingdom of God. Not, look how great I am, and let be codependent on me while I wow you. So I think all of those things mitigate against women in leadership. It's a shame, and hopefully it will bring the change.
Yeah, can you read that question one more time? The beginning of the question, especially.
Discuss specific obstacles women currently face in the local church to keep them from leading well and feeling free to lead.
Yeah. There was something I loved what Tish did, talking about just internal and external. There's something about that. So I feel like I can't, as a guy, I feel like I can't answer part, like, I'd be silly to try to answer that question from any kind of internal perspective. I don't have that. I'm married, so I do see, you know, I see a little bit through my wife's eyes to whatever degree that's possible. But what I do know from more of an external perspective is it seems like the resistance and what sometimes makes this so difficult for a woman stepping into or trying to cultivate a position of leadership is its men's inability to be led by a woman. And, you know, and I sure don't judge any men for that, because this is a generational, it's a cultural thing. There are, you know, there are just people who are missing the mark in all kinds of ways, sexism and racism, all things we can talk about. But there's just also the reality that I think we are of a generation now where, as the ball is moving forward in this realm, we have just a lot of guys who, they see good leadership, they see a woman who can lead well, yet they still don't really know if they're permitted, allowed to follow. Is that okay? Can I follow a great leader? When you know, it was funny when I first got into ministry, someone just said to me, like, if you're wondering what a great leader looks like, just look behind them. And I just thought, that's so elementary, but it's so right. If there's people following, there's probably something going on there. Maybe you may agree or not agree, but there's something there with their leadership. Well, some of the people that I've seen with the most people following them into movements right now have just been women in my life. So this is really personal. It's not academic for me at all. But I see, I just see it's difficult sometimes for men to follow. And so for a woman in that position, that's going to be a point of resistance for sure, and probably even intimidating to some degree. So I'm not sure if that answers the question, but it's super external. Yeah.
Hey friends, all this month I've been talking about this new book, The Road Back to You, from InterVarsity Press. It's about the Enneagram. If you don't know about the Enneagram, well, you should definitely learn about it. Google it or something, I guess. The book's written by Ian Morgan Cron and Suzanne Stabile. They've got their own podcast out there. You should check that out. But I want to talk about this new book, The Road Back to You. Listen, a lot of people who you know of who've been on Seminary Dropout are raving about this book, like Shauna Nequest, Michael Gunger, Makoto Fujimura. People are really finding this book to be life-giving. The Enneagram is kind of a personality test, and maybe you've taken some in the past, like a Myers-Briggs, or like when I was in college, the DISC personality test is really popular. I find the Enneagram to be very, very different. You can go out and take tests that will tell you what number it is, but I think experts in the Enneagram and the authors of The Road Back to You would probably say that there's no test that can tell you for sure what you are, that really you just have to read about the different types, know yourself well, and decide what you are. So, you know, I, according to a test, am a 9 with a 1 wing. I'm not sure about that. I'm working through that. It's interesting stuff. So definitely check out The Road Back to You, and you can get that book for 30% off by going to ivpress.com/dropout. I'll have a link to it in the show notes. Check out The Road Back to You.
So I want to talk about just the idea of men and women in ministry working together and that being an asset. I don't know if anyone here remembers this or you on the panel, but a couple of months ago, or maybe several months ago, The Gap came out with this ad that was a bunch of children wearing their clothes. It was pretty racially diverse, but there was an African-American girl who was a little younger. Next to her was standing a white girl who was older and taller and had her elbow kind of resting on the head of the African-American girl. And a lot of people in the African-American community felt that that was really offensive. And honestly, to be real honest, until my friends or people of color, you know, pointed that out to me, I don't think I would have noticed that. It's just something about privilege, I think. But I thought, you know, I would be willing to bet that the marketing team at The Gap who came up with that were probably a bunch of white people who had no intentions on making a racist advertisement for The Gap, right? But it occurred to me that that is where diversity in your team becomes a real asset. And I wonder if there's a time where any of you can think of where you felt like having both men and women working together really was an asset for you in your churches. I'll let whoever wants to.
Well, I think I'll jump right out of this one. This is an easy one for me. So So Tasha, getting to, so we've been teaming together for, you know, the better part of this year now, about 9 months probably. Tasha is actually one of the greatest gifts I've ever received, outside of my own family, wife, kids, and all that. I mean, there's nothing like getting to work with Tasha. Now, I want to start by saying it's not because she's a woman or an African-American woman. It's because she's actually one of the best leaders I've ever seen in my life. She's one of the best. She's actually one of the most caring, loving people I've ever known. Like, it's funny, like, you know, she, Be the Bridge is her nonprofit, and there's great things going on there. But I think the great things that are happening with this nonprofit start with the fact that everything Tasha does builds bridges all the time. So with or without a web address attached to it, or a nonprofit or any, this is who she is. And so the thing about it that I've learned is, this year more than ever before, is getting to team with this woman has actually so broadened my scope of not only ministry, but of people and of culture. I'm in seminary right now, is what I tell people, and it's on the job seminary. That's how God's got a great sense of humor, and for some reason I get to do some of the things we do together. But it's incredible. I feel like every day that I work with Tasha, and I just listen to her insights on watching the people, watching ethnicity, watching diversity or the lack thereof all the time. For me as a leader, anybody who, for better or for worse, is under my leadership on any given day, they are becoming more and more fortunate the longer I get to work with Tasha. Because she has just taught me how to see the world through completely different eyes. And again, you know, Shane, you mentioned privilege. Privilege is a funny thing because you don't know what you don't know. Right. Like, you know, I've lived my whole, I'm from the eastern side of Los Angeles County, and so, and I only say that as a reference to just a very multicultural dynamic I grew up in. That was never something I was very aware of. And yet, I never knew I was white privileged either. It's something you just didn't know. And then I met Tasha, and I've just been living in shame. It's just like the awareness that I have, though, of, oh my gosh, you don't know how good things are unless you know, and there's things you don't recognize. And that wouldn't have happened any other way in my life. I mean, that was something God gave me this year specifically. And so, if for no other reason, the way it just broadens our focus to actually work together, in this case, outside of just male-to-male relationships or leadership teams, having that diversity. And somebody looked at our team at our staff meeting one time and said, oh, you guys are like a Robert Palmer video. And I don't know if you guys get the reference, but Robert Palmer, like, I'm old, but Robert Palmer, his videos were always him and then a bunch of girls playing with him. Like, that was his little video gimmick or whatever. Well, I realized our team is pretty much, it's just pretty much a lot of girls who are way smarter than me sitting around, and I sit there like, what am I doing here? Like, this team is amazing. I shouldn't even be here. But that's just kind of what our team looks like, and it is a privilege. So I've gone from, I've grown into a consciousness of white privilege, but I've also learned so much this year about just human privilege from working with you and getting to see life through a different lens. So.
And I would say, I think for me, anytime you talk about diversity, diversity, like when you look at it from a business standpoint, it improves your bottom line because it allows you to reach. Think about Coke. If Coke would have stayed, Coca-Cola, if it would have stayed the same company it was in 1930 and how it did its marketing, Coke probably wouldn't be here today. You know, you think about this. So there's a lot we can learn as the church from the business sector, you know, and I think, you know, and that takes humility, you know, it really does, because one of the things I'm working with Kenny, it's the first time I'm working in a church environment that I felt that I can be all of who God created me to be. And that I felt that I'm not being intimidated, you know, because I do have opinions, or, you know, I'm not having, you know, to watch my voice, like how I care, you know, all these different things that we as women worry about. But then also the thing that I worry about as a woman of color, you know, that I bring to the table. And I think that it takes humility as it relates to male privilege and male leadership to be able to learn, you know, from someone. But I think, you know, with that partnership, you know, when you have diversity as far as women and men, you know, around the table, it's the same thing as having that diversity as it relates to having people of color around the table. You know, not just as tokens, you know, not just like we have women and we're going to place them here to greet, or we have women's ministry,
right,
or, you know, we can let you do something in children's ministry, but a place around the table that can speak into direction and vision, you know, that's key. And I think the church benefits from that type of leadership. So, of course, the church, you know, the church grows. You are broadened as a person as you get to know people who are unlike yourself. So I am better because I have male friends, you know. I am better because even I have Latino friends. I've learned so much from the Asian community. Like, I have several friends that work with me and be the bridge that are Asian Americans. And I tell you, I've grown so much just learning about the culture, which helps it. I mean, a lot of, you know, vision as it relates to be the bridge and the guide and everything has come from a lot of the Asian culture, you know? And so, but if I didn't have friendships in my life, I wouldn't have that. And then being able to understand, you know, men and how they work, and you know, it's a lot that we understand about men that they don't necessarily understand. but it's been a privilege, and I think a healing place for me to work with Kenny, because he doesn't bring all that mess. He doesn't have all that junk. He's you know, he's just open, you know, just human. Anybody that knows Kenny, you know, knows that about him. That is who he is, like, all the time. Like, he's very sincere. He's not putting on front for anyone. And that authenticity helps me as a person, you know, having that in a church structure. I can take that, what I'm learning, outside of that. So, yeah. I guess you can understand something in there.
That was great. Yeah.
So I completely agree with that perspective, like everything they're saying about women bringing, like, another perspective. But I think, I mean, a lot of the theology underneath that is the theme of God is male and female.
Ooh,
and
yeah.
So I think that's become such a huge and important understanding for me of just the interdependence of men and women that goes to creation, that will be eternal. There's something about the image of God fully seen in maleness and femaleness. Not that men alone don't have the image of God, because they do, not that women alone don't have the image of God, but the fullness of that is, the picture is male and female. And so I agree with all of that, but now I'm going to answer something just super pragmatic. So pragmatically, also, I've just seen, so I work on a priest team with three men and me, and we're all priests, and we have this resurrection self-gospel as a church plan, and I love them, and they love me. One of them is my husband, so I really love them. Like, another of them has sort of become like a father to me, and another a brother, and so we love each other. We hang out, and that's been amazing, but it's interesting that when we do healing prayer in our church every 3 weeks, and it's become a joke in our church, because there's always me and two other priests up who are men, because that's who I work with, and they're like, come up for healing prayer, and then they get like three people in their lines, and I have like 12 or like 15. It's like backed up. So they're always sort of like, we know when healing prayer, we're just gonna have to sit there and wait for Tish. And it's because so many of the women come to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because I'm awesome, because they are more awesome than me, or as awesome. But it's because I think there's this hunger. I think there's a real hunger from women to be cared for and discipled by women, and not just because I think we have discipleship, sort of peer relationships with women, but I honestly, and some of this may get into my physiology, I think women are looking for women in authority.
Yeah.
I think there's so many fathers in the church that are such great fathers that I think people are looking for mothers in the church, like mothers to them. And that has nothing to do with whether or not you have biological children. That's not what I mean. It has nothing to do with age, because some of the women who I think see me in that way are, well, I could be their daughter. But I think there's a sense that we're longing for women who can be spiritual mothers to us in that way, and to kind of embody that. And so then I'm going to briefly tell a crazy story about the early church. But there's an early church father named Origen, who was an Eastern father in the church. And he, and I don't recommend this, but he was so intent. He was like, we have to have a place for, well, he was so intense about ministry to women. And for him, a huge part of that is confession, receiving confessions from women. But he wanted to be a safe place for women to tell, like, all the dirt, like, the worst of the worst, and you know, sexual sin and that sort of stuff. So, being that there weren't female, like, priests and leaders around him, he castrated himself so that he could be safe for a woman to confess and to receive ministry from him. So when people tell me they don't want leadership in the church, I say that's completely fine. Who's going to castrate themselves from your staff?
I'm going to keep teaming with women.
Though, is that he was that intense that he wasn't like, well, I don't know if I'm meeting the pastoral needs of women, but they'll probably be okay. He was like, we have got to make sure women are taken care of. And I think that men, and when the reason that I say that, I mean, it's somewhat of a joke, but I say it to say, like, you, if you're not that serious about making sure that the spiritual needs of 55% of your congregation are met, if you're not willing to go there, then you're just ignoring people in your church. And so I think very pragmatically, we need men and women because people need, because women need discipleship. I obviously have received lots of discipleship from men. And I certainly think I can disciple men, and in fact do. And so I'm not saying that we can only stick with our own gender in ministry. I mean, I think one of the people that I meet with most frequently is a guy, and that I as a younger guy that I'm friends with. But I think what I mean by that, though, is that there is something about, we can all minister to each other, but there is, I think, times and specific things we're struggling with and specific issues that it really does help to talk to someone who is a female, if you're a female, or a male, if you're a male. And if we don't have that for women, it becomes very weird and very gross really quickly. And so I think absolutely, in terms of bringing other perspectives and life experience, I mean, just things like, I think about infertility way more than anyone else in my team, because that's something that I've walked through. And so I can always bring that up. And so all of that to say, I think there's perspective, and then there's just this pragmatic thing of, there are women in the church and they are hurting, and they need people who they're able to call at 3 a.m. and their wife's not saying, who is calling you at 3 a.m? That has a few moments, you know, there needs to be a safe place for women.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can jump in there, one thing I really like about what you said is that I think sometimes people on the outside looking in think that these conversations are about erasing differences between men and women. But kind of what you said was, no, it's really embracing those, that there's this thing that God created a woman to be and a man to be, and those things are an asset to the church.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I agree with that. I also want to add that the church later condemned castration for the sake of ministry, so you're in
there. For a long time, that was the only thing I knew about worship. Stuck in my head for some reason.
I think the question was about adding or having women on your team, and how to, and I can think, let me tell a quick story. There's a lady in our church, she's a little younger than I am, she went to seminary, and she's brilliant, and she had, as a child, had a brain aneurysm. It's miraculous, she survived, but it took away her peripheral vision, and so she has to ride the bus. And her husband's an engineer. They live in Westlake. I mean, they've done quite well economically. And she would probably, she's the kind of person, I could see her being like a Tish. I mean, she's that kind of commitment to Christ and that kind of brain and that sort of thing. And she, I just went to her and I said, what do you want to do? You know, and I think that's a big thing is asking people that are gifted and in the church and not, and aren't in leadership, but should be, just asking them. And she said, well, you know, I've been going to seminary, I'd like to teach. I said, well, I'll try to run interference for that. So we had we had a teaching team. I put her on the teaching team. And it changed the atmosphere of the church. It's what you're saying. I mean, she began to speak in a way and to things that men didn't speak to. And so that greatly, that was a great blessing and helped our church. The other thing I did is I brought her on staff because she wanted to work at the church, and I made her our community outreach person. And my church is in Central Austin. It's kind of in the Keep Austin Weird sector, and all you guys would fit well there. You know, y'all are young and cool and all that. Most people in my church are not. Okay.
Someone tweeted that.
But that's changing. So I said to Cheryl, I said, Cheryl, you know what I would like for you to do in community outreach? I just want you to be an ambassador of goodwill from this church to find out how can we bless this neighborhood? Because the church that was there before was a great church, but it was First E.B. Free that's now Southwest, you know. Great church. But Rob Harrell told me when we moved in there, he said, we didn't have any impact on this neighborhood whatsoever. It was all people coming in. And when we came in, we're a smaller church, I said, I want that to change. We're here for this neighborhood. And so we began to do things. Like she would go to the neighborhood meetings, we began to connect with them. Just ordinary stuff. Letting groups, we let a lot of recovery groups meet at our church. And I fought for that. And that has helped connect with a lot of different people who normally wouldn't go to a church like mine would go to the Unity Church or something like that, you know. And so that's been really good. But in just a few years, her influence was so great that I would go places, and, you know, and I'm a pastor there, and they would say, oh, that's Cheryl's church. Y'all must be good people. She's wonderful. Cheryl goes to your church? Yeah, she goes, believe it or not. And so it really was a powerful kingdom sort of thing. And so I'm very thankful for that.
Yeah. So the next question I have is, address the common problem of men feeling ill-equipped to mentor women in leadership. First of all, does that ring true to everyone here?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's true of all of them. I mean, yeah. Yes and no. It's more true of some men than others, obviously. I think a lot of it has to do with upbringing. A lot of it has to do with emotional health. Maybe a lot of it has to do with who your mother was. I had a very strong Texas woman for a mom who just died this year. And I mean, you know, I tell people she kept my little brother out of prison and put me in therapy. And but you know, I grew up with strong women, and you know, I just used to it. And I was a high school teacher before I was vocationally a pastor, and most of the leadership there were women. And I, you know, it was wonderful. So I think a lot of it is just your upbringing, your you know, where you are emotionally, and your life experience. And some men, and you know, I love to work with women. I mean, but some men, it's just like, you know, they just freeze. I haven't had to take Origins route either, I think.
Yeah, I'm sitting here thinking about it. I don't know that I resonate with it being even true personally, so I'm not sure. Don't necessarily want to. You know, there's too many other potential great answers to that. I don't want to manufacture anything. Except, yeah, I haven't experienced it personally where my inability or ability to mentor anyone well had something to do with their gender.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there have been women that have been hard to mentor, not because they were women, just because as a person, we weren't connected. My leadership style, my personality. My potty humor. I don't know, something we weren't connecting like where we needed to, but I don't think it had as much to do with male and female stuff, so I'll pass it to the smarter part of the panel here.
So, I think, the question is, what do I make of men having a hard time deciding women?
Mentoring
for men. So I should say I've been mentored by amazing men. So, I've experienced that is not always true, because, I mean, and even, I went to seminary because a PCA pastor against women's ordination was like, I took a seminary class with him, and he was like, you were made to be in seminary, you have to promise me you'll finish. So I think, so men that shouldn't have even been encouraging me to do this are like, why am I doing this? And so, But that being said, I think this piece about emotional health is really big. And I could come up with sort of theological or heady reasons, but I honestly think so much of it is a failure of imagination. That I think that many of us in ministry completely subconsciously have a picture of what a leader or a minister looks like. And that could be a lot of things. I mean, that could be shaped by male or female. It could also be like extrovert, introvert, or intellectual, non-intellectual, or we have this sort of, I think pastors can be kind of control freaks, and we can have this sort of sense of what we want in a person. And then if you read the scriptures, Jesus always just blows up those categories and picks the person that no one wanted to pick. And so I think that we, in terms of imagination, not in terms of anything conscious, often just picture the people we mentor or picture leaders like us and and like men. I mean, and this, yeah. So when I was long for women's ordination, I was for women's ordination in my brain, but couldn't picture myself as a female pastor, and I've been in ministry for years, but every time I pictured myself as like in the church as a pastor, I pictured myself theologically liberal, which I'm not, and so that didn't really fit. I pictured myself old, like a really old woman, like I shouldn't be, I need to be like well past menopause to count, and then or I thought menopause and castration on this or as a man, because the people that I looked up to were men. And so someone who was discipling me said, I want you just to go look at the Aldi catalog and literally look at female priests. Just look at pictures of them. Mm-hmm. And I saw this picture of a woman in a priest gear, because we wear special clothes, and who was pregnant. and I just started sobbing, just uncontrollably crying. And it was because something was happening in my imagination that my theological brain couldn't get to. And I think with male leaders, they're so, especially male leaders that are really wanting to honor God and keep pure sexually, they are drilled into their imaginations that women are a sexual threat, that they're that they are something that could hurt them or could hurt their integrity. And I think that's very damaging, because you're not seeing people as women, as humans.
Yeah,
you're
absolutely
seeing them as a threat. And I think there's an imagination work that has to happen here, to get us out of our sense of this is what a leader looks like. Or even I've seen people who are open to female leadership, but femaleness looks this very specific way. So open to female leadership, but she needs to be real sweet and southern. I mean, that's in the South. In the North, it's something different. But to be like, you know, I mean, I don't know, could a woman that drinks whiskey and cuss be a leader? I mean, maybe not if you have a problem with whiskey and cussing, but I hope it's not a woman that does that. So what I'm saying is, I think there's some imagination work that has to happen here, because honestly, we're led by our imagination, we're led by our hearts, and our brains kind of run after that. So I think a lot of it is working on that.
I agree with a lot of what she said. I think one of the main things that really sticks out to me as far as my personal experience is that the whole sexual being part. You know, that's a really key thing, because we have seen a lot of moral failures as it relates to mentoring relationship and discipleship and different things. And so that safeguard. So it goes back to, you know, I think emotional health, spiritual health, as it relates to those relationships, and really changing the narrative, you know, in that. And I think some of that training has to come out in seminary, and how men are also being discipled by other men. You know, I think we have to shift that narrative in order for that to happen. I think for me, I've had male mentors, and I've had female mentors, you know, and I have mentored men. I'm mentoring a male leader within our church now. So I think, you know, for me, I'm kind of like, I think we have to change that narrative, you know, and I think it's something that we can't be afraid of or just kind of, you know, skate over it a little bit. And I think in the church, instead of really dealing with these hardcore personal issues and health issues, we're always playing catch up, you know, and we're not being the headlights in any of these conversations where the world needs to hear our voice and speak to these things, but we're actually a part of the problem, and we've been damaged by the issues that we're not able to speak to those things. But I think about, you know, you have you know, the president of Yahoo is a female. Xerox, Boeing, you know, those are all females. But you think, you know, in a lot of our churches here in America, most of them couldn't even lead a Sunday school. And in some cases, couldn't even pray from the main stage. The men that those women are having to mentor. So we had the church, we have a lot to catch up with, you know, and I think some of it, we need to get over ourselves, you know, and then as men who are leaders and men that are in this room, you have to be leaders in this. You know, it takes, you know, it takes pioneers, it takes forward thinkers, it takes, it's going to take men to change that trajectory. It's going to take men, you know, changing this narrative. And so for speaking up and talking about this, and then how you perpetuate in that and how you raise your children.
Yes.
And, you know, how you raise your sons, you know, it doesn't take a lot, it takes a few. you know? And so I say that, you know, as it relates to, I kind of compare these things because, you know, when we're talking about these systems, these isms in our life, you know, sexism and, you know, all these things, I think, you know, it's going to be, you know, it's going to take men and pastors, which I'm so glad that there's so many represented here and that we're having these conversations, is, you know, we're depending on you guys to kind of help change this and shift this this narrative, you know, as it relates to women. And I would say the health of the church, it depends on it, you know, for us to really wake up, you know. I feel like the church is going to be okay. You know, we're going to be all right. God's on the throne and he's in control. I understand that, you know. But I think he's trying to do something new. And not just within us, but in his bride. And I think these conversations, I don't take them lightly. You know, I feel like God is speaking and he's speaking to our hearts about a lot of things. You know, and he who has ears to hear, let them hear. And so I would say for the men in this room, you know, what are you going to do different? You know, how are you going to raise your sons? How are you going to raise your daughters? You know, so.
Yeah, people say women can't preach.
How do we get on the front? I mean, I'm just thinking about, you know, you think about the New Testament time, the church was the progressive moving forward. How do we get ahead of that without, you know, it's like, and not get swallowed up by the world. But I mean, as all of you know, half the fight when you're sharing someone with someone your faith is to try to get people to unlearn what they think they know. And so how do we get ahead of that? You know, I just feel like we're playing catch up all the time. You know.
I think it starts personal.
Yeah.
I think there's some things that we have to die to personally. Mm-hmm. And there's some dismantling that we have to do within our frameworks, you know.
Yeah.
You know, but I think it begins here. Transformation begins with us. You can't change other people. You can't change the church without changing yourself. We're a part of the church, you know. And so the church benefits from the work that we do, you know, personally in our personal lives. So I think, you know, there's a, because if we look at it as this whole piece, you know, it could be discouraging.
Yeah,
like, how in the world? But you know what? I can change my community. You know, I can change, you know, my friendships, my relationships, how how you lead in your family, your extended family. Just starting there helps impact others, you know?
Kingdom principles.
Yeah, and the kingdom principles, so yeah.
And can I add to that?
No.
Women ask if we can speak before we speak. People who grew up in Texas. I want to say that I think, because there can be, what I'm saying is the church can just get all wrapped up in the culture war. So, you can go around churches in Austin and you can sit there and you'll know pretty soon, is this church trying to be on the radical vanguard of the progressive left?
Yeah.
Or they're trying to be on sort of the radical vanguard of the keep things the way they are right. And so I don't want feminism to be sort of wrapped up in progressivism, where
absolutely,
we just say, how can we make the church more progressive?
Right.
I think that being deeply steeped in scripture and theology of creation and kind of the vision that Jesus had of ethics just makes all those categories sort of fall apart, just leak like a sieve and just not really hold water. And I think with the whole imagination thing, I think these ways of thinking about the world of kind of progressive, we're just going to sort of break down all barriers of truth and meaning or things that would inhibit us in any way, or conservative, like we just need to get everything like the 1950s again and be all right. But those are both so dehumanizing. And I think that when we steep ourselves in this gospel story and in scripture and in the and then the church, best of the church, there's this, it just sort of explodes that. And so, when I call myself a Christian feminist, I think that that's a pretty radically different thing than some versions of feminism out there. And I think, so all of that to say, I think that instead of trying to be progressive or conservative, if we could really seek to embrace this radically different other alternative ethic and be transformed by scripture, then I think things start to explode in like a really beautiful way. Like, I think it just kind of shocks everyone and offends everyone. And allures everyone and is beautiful to everyone. I think it's, it can get just get real dicey in a good way. And so the church, in this way, it just the church can be so risk averse. And I think we just need to embrace the risk of being an alternative community.
Yeah.
I think that's the... You know, with the polarized society we have, what I tell my congregation is, what is the third way of Jesus?
Yeah,
what is so, it's not left or right, it's Jesus. And what does that look like? And I think that, that you've articulated that very well.
And we don't realize that it's different. Mm-hmm. You know, in our society, like, you know, we feel that it's either left or right.
That's right.
You know,
right.
There's
no more choices.
There's no more than choices.
Right.
But I think what I'm seeing happen is that that third way, which is the way of Jesus. Which is different.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
I get excited too about thinking that, you know, I feel like you watch the Western expression of church, the church so often chasing after cultural relevance. Like we're always sort of, how is our expression going to be relevant this year? How are we going to look more like the culture and be more? And I just think, how much more exciting is it to think about being a movement that moves culture forward? That the culture is. That once again, there was a time, you know, in church history that rather people loved the idea of the way of Jesus or not, that the most compelling thing about Jesus was the followers of him.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Even if they wanted to do away with this movement politically, that, you know, the question was always, how could we do that? Who would take care of the widows and the orphans? Who would do what these people do the way they do it? I just get excited about thinking about being that, again, as a church, something that is moving things forward, all where the culture is really more chasing after the church again.
Absolutely.
As a way to live life in a way that just, I think, makes just more sense.
That's true. I love that. Those are good words. I think, and not to contradict anything anyone said here, but I think it's kind of what you're saying is that, like, it's not about even being behind culture, even in front of culture, although that's a good thing, but it's about being faithful to who God's created the church to be. So we are against a hard out. In fact, we're late and we're missing some other stuff. But I wouldn't have stopped this for the world. I'm so thankful for you.
Thanks for joining me for another episode of Seminary Dropout. Remember, you can find all the show notes for this show and all shows at shaneblackshear.com. Oh, and hey, have you ever thought about starting your very own podcast? I bet you have. And I think you should do it. In fact, I've created a course just for you to teach you everything that I've learned over the last couple of years producing Seminary Dropout. So if you're interested in podcasting and want to learn how, go check out my course. You can go there by typing in podcastingforeveryone.org. And you can get a special discount by typing in the discount code SeminaryDropout, all one word. That'll give you 25% off. So go check it out. If you have any questions, let me know. Okay. Thanks to those that left ratings and reviews on iTunes this week. Remember, that keeps the show front and center. Also, remember, you can find me on Twitter at Beard on a Bike. That's at Beard on a Bike. Also, I'm on Facebook, facebook.com/ShaneBlackshear123. And remember that Seminary Dropout is listener supported. You can visit supportseminarydropout.com and press Become a Patron. Remember, this music you're listening to right now is by D.L. Rossi. You can find him online on iTunes and at dlrossi.com. All right, thanks again for joining me for another episode of Seminary Dropout. Stay tuned for next week's episode. Love you. Take care. Yeah,